Welcome, welcome. It's another edition of Cool Stuff Ride Home. Marcus Papp joined by Reggie Rizzou. On today's episode, one feathered tourist causes a stir in Las Vegas, bringing the Bellagio fountains to a halt. Speaking of birds, a new study indicates they may be smarter than we think. And file this under, you've got to be kidding me, a pair of doppelgangers with more than just looks in common. Plus, this day in history, the helicopter achieves aviation history. That's all coming up on Cool Stuff. Well, most people who visit Las Vegas come away with a story or two, and I suppose the same can be said for one feathered tourist. Wildlife biologists captured and relocated a yellow-billed loon earlier this week, but not before it caused an interruption to one of the city's most famous spectacles, the Bellagio Fountains. The show was paused after the loon opted to take refuge in the man-made lake from which the fountains originate. The bird was eventually removed by the Nevada Department of Wildlife, unharmed, by the way. Department spokesperson Doug Nielsen said the juvenile bird was likely seeking shelter from a storm. There have been a lot of those in Vegas over the last couple weeks. I can personally attest to that. And the Bellagio's choreographed water show resumed in the afternoon, that per an MGM Resorts spokesperson. So why the fuss for a single bird? Well, according to the National Park Service, the yellow-billed loon is an international species of concern that is considered to be one of the 10 rarest birds that regularly breed on the mainland U.S., and thus, concerned bird experts pressed Nevada State wildlife officials to intervene here to ensure the bird's safety. Officials initially hoped the loon would fly away on its own, but when that didn't happen in a timely fashion, state wildlife officials opted to capture and relocate the bird to a more suitable and remote location where it had space, food, and quiet surroundings. That per the Associated Press. The AP also spoke with one Vegas area veteran bird watcher named Kurt Buzzard, apropos last name, I suppose. Man. He told them yellow-billed loons normally nest around the Arctic Circle and winter in Canada, the U.S., Norway, or Siberia. I think it's lost and probably disoriented, said Buzzard. He went on to say that because the man-made lake at Bellagio doesn't have fish, the bird might be too hungry to continue its migratory path. Nielsen said birds sometimes get a bit off course during their annual migration due to such things as heavy winds or poor weather conditions. Quote, the important thing at this point is the bird is where it has an opportunity to get reoriented and resume its northern migration, end quote.
I mean, the one thing you can say is, although people may not have seen the Bellagio fountains do their thing, they still got a show. You get to see a rare bird. You know, I don't know how well you could see it, but you could see it. There is kind of a show, kind of an appeal, especially for someone like Buzzard to come out and check it out.
Someone like Buzzard. Yeah, I mean, you're not wrong. I don't know if it has the mass appeal that the Bellagio fountains do. Not everyone is a bird enthusiast or would have any idea what was even happening in front of them in all likelihood. My guess is I'd look at it and say, why is this duck causing such a problem for these people? And what happened to the water show?
You have someone go out there and you promote it. You're like, check out this rare bird, you know.
Well, to be honest, as someone who lives in Las Vegas, the show's better at night anyway. So if it had to disrupt a particular part of the day, the morning seems like the time to do it. A show's resumed in the afternoon, and then, of course, you have the night show and the lights of Vegas, all that fun stuff. So all's well that ends well, I suppose. And hey, unless you were only there one more morning, you probably still had an opportunity to come back and check out the fountains. Now, speaking of migratory birds, a new study from scientists at the University of Wyoming and the Max Planck Institute of Animal Behavior in Germany suggests these creatures actually learn from past experiences to shorten their annual journeys as they get older. Now, recall the loon in Las Vegas was a juvenile, so perhaps he'll avoid making the same mistake again in the future here? Per GNN, researchers observing white storks in Germany and Austria found the birds plot more direct routes and even develop shortcuts as they age, while younger birds take more time to explore. The study, published in the journal Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, was conducted using sophisticated tracking of more than 250 white storks spread across five breeding areas in southern Germany and Austria between 2013 and 2020. The tracking data pinpointed the migration routes of storks, but also measured the timing and pace of individuals. The researchers found young storks typically took their time exploring new places during migration, and individual storks incrementally straightened their migration routes as they aged to find more direct paths to their destinations. The study's lead author, Dr. Ellen Aiken, said, quote, as the birds age and gain more experience, older individuals stop exploring new places and instead move more quickly and directly, resulting in greater energy expenditure during migratory flight. During spring migration, individuals innovated novel shortcuts during the transition from early life into adulthood, suggesting a reliance on spatial memory acquired through learning, end quote. And while the researchers don't dispute the importance of genetics and culturally inherited information, as they put it, in animal migrations, they say the new findings point towards individual experience being another key factor. Said Dr. Aiken, quote, whether the first migration is guided by genetics or results from following informed individuals, learning within a lifetime represents an additional and complementary mechanism shaping animal migration, end quote.
Sounds like humans. When you're young, you want to go out, you want to explore. As you get older, you just kind of get where you're going and be done with it. So it sounds like humans.
I had the same thought, Reggie. It's like, yeah, you're young, you get out, you like to see new places. I mean, I guess not all of us necessarily give that up as we age, but by and large, it feels like, hey, this is where we're headed. I'm getting on this freeway and I'm getting there. We're not stopping off at a gift shop in some other remote location. We're not diverting from the path 15 miles. So yeah, I think I can attest to that. I'm more and more seeing these migratory birds patterns in myself these days.
Well, that even applies to everything, like, you know, cooking. As you get older, you experience it more. You know shortcuts. You can do it faster. You don't have to wait for this. You know what to do. You know, it just every aspect of your life. It makes sense that as you get older, you're going to find the shortcuts and stick with that instead of going the long way and be like, eh, maybe I'll do this and take a break and check this out. Or yeah, it makes sense to me.
Reg, I can't say it's ever happened to me, but have you ever run into someone you'd consider your doppelganger?
Multiple times. I am a generic white-looking male, so I've ran into my doppelganger almost everywhere I go. In fact, there was college. There were, I think, three of us that looked exactly the same, and people confused us.
I know you're married, but I wish you had a dating profile just so you could plug in the bio, generic white-looking male. Come and get it, ladies.
I believe for Snapchat, I thought at one point I changed it to basic being part of my my name, because I'm just your basic guy.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, the New York Post recently ran a story about two individuals from the UK who wound up sitting next to each other on a flight from London to Bangkok, and the similarities extended beyond just their looks. First of all, both men had shaved heads, but they also shared the same name, Mark Garland. And when one of the men attempted to check into the flight at Heathrow Airport, he was told that he'd already checked in. One of the men is 58-year-old Mark Garland, a bus driver who hails from Trowbridge, Wiltshire. The other is 62-year-old Mark Garland, a builder from Warmley, Bristol. So what's even more uncanny here, the two men were seated next to each other for the entire 11.5-hour flight to Thailand, allowing them to discover even more similarities. First of all, what are the odds that they end up sitting right next to each other? They live just 15 miles apart, with the builder, Garland, occasionally even riding the bus driver's route. They even shared a friend who frequented the builder's local pub. Beyond that, both men are single fathers of four, though the bus driver never got married while the builder was separated. Said bus driving Mark Garland, quote, I stood at the check-in counter for 40 minutes while they tried to work out the problem. We then had to go to the boarding gate early to identify our cases, end quote. That's when the two men first met in person. The younger Garland continued, quote, I was shocked at how strange it was. People said we could be brothers, end quote. The elder Mark was similarly shocked, saying, quote, it was crazy. I've never known anything like it. I go to the desk and there's a guy who looks just like me, but he's a bit bigger than me, end quote. The construction worker said before cheekily quipping, I'm better looking though.
I make that same joke because people say my brothers and I all look the same. So I always just like to tell them I'm the better looking one.
Yeah, you're a good looking generic white guy, right?
Yep, that's right. Average looking.
Average looking, okay.
I'm average in every way.
My bad. Make sure I get the bio right.
Not looking for anything special? Check me out.
Swipe right.
I still remember the time my brother and I went to a restaurant, which, by the way, I have to say, the people I went to college with, at least we didn't have the same name. There's not too many
Reggie Rizzo's out there. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. But my brother and I went to a restaurant and the person asked us if we're twins. And at the same time, we both look at each other and say no. And then at the same time, we both do the exact same giggle. And then we realize how pathetic that sounded. And then we both sighed at the same time. So it made us seem like twins.
Two giggling brothers.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Mail checks, invoices, documents, and everything you need to keep your business running. Get rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS. And with the mobile app, you can take care of mailing on the go. Make the same no-brainer decisions as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up at Stamps.com with code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Taking a look at this day in history, on March 8th, 1946, the first helicopter license for commercial use was issued. It actually all started in 1928 as Arthur M. Young, who was only 23 years old at the time, was looking for a challenge. After many trips to the patent office to evaluate ideas that he had, he was most fascinated by a book that was written by Anton Fletner, who created a ship that crossed the Atlantic in 1927 using rotary drums. Young liked the idea of the windmill propellers and thought it could be applied to an aircraft instead. Later in life, Young said, quote, "There wasn't much information on helicopters before 1900 because until the arrival of the automobile, engines haven't been built that were powerful enough to meet the requirements of vertical flight. I also discovered that there were more attempts to make helicopters than airplanes, but in 1928, there were no successful rotary wing machines," end quote. Now, his first helicopter used parts from a toy store and was made from rubber bands, wooden propellers that he carved, and balsa wood strips. That 6-foot-long helicopter lasted 10 seconds in the air. Over the years, he had enough crashes with his experiments that he had a neighbor start mass-producing the rotor blades.
Who was his neighbor?
Some farmer who had a barn and just start, you know, cutting them out of wood for him. It's a nice neighbor, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, you ask your neighbor, hey, could you mass produce these things for me, please? Thanks so much.
Yes. You've got the equipment. I'm sure he paid them in some way.
Like, does he just have a manufacturing warehouse or something on his property?
Hey, it's 1928. People are bored.
Sure, let me just hire some people.
Yeah. He finally got some of his experiments to fly better, but control was an issue. According to Young, quote, "After a series of unsuccessful flights, I decided to try a stabilizer bar. With the addition of this device, the model performed remarkably, showing great stability. In a few days, I was flying the helicopter in the barn. I could even hover it motionless," end quote. Well, now that he had a working model, in 1941, he demonstrated it for the Bell Aircraft Company. A few months later, they had an agreement to build the helicopter. The company's first version, Model 30, crashed when the pilot, who was also a company executive and insisted on flying the helicopter, lost control. Luckily, he only had a broken arm. The company received many important visitors over the years to check out their designs, including Russian and U.S. military officials, and Igor Sikorsky, who ended up having the world's first mass-produced helicopter in 1942. I guess it's a little bit different. You can maybe steal some designs back then. I don't know.
Yeah, never mind. It's intellectual property. I'm taking it.
Yeah. He asked him a few questions like, oh, so you're using this? And you're like, yep. He's like, okay. And then he left. So I guess...
Well, I mean, come on, you got to have an understanding that if you're going to show all these people that they're, especially if you're going to show military officials, you know what they're in it for.
Oh, yes, exactly. Yeah. So I'm going to skip some important facts here, including the first doctor transported to the scene of a medical emergency using a helicopter. But skipping ahead to 1945, they rolled out the Bell Model 47. At this time, they were rushing to get the first commercial license before, do you want to take a guess who?
Is it Igor Sikorsky?
It would. That would be the person.
Shocking.
Yes. So they tried to get that commercial license before him, and it may have been an ugly duckling. The helicopter wasn't as sleek looking as they wanted it to be, but it passed the test. The Civil Aeronautics Administration, now known as the FAA, awarded them with the commercial license. The Model 47 was in production for 27 years, and over 5,000 commercial and military versions came off of the assembly line.
Interesting. Yeah, I would love to do a little more research. And as you pointed out, you know, there's a lot of details that go into the development of the helicopter over the years, because I don't think we hear as much about it as we do, of course, Orville and Wilbur Wright and the airplane. And I guess understandably so. But certainly there is something about the vertical takeoff that has always fascinated aviation enthusiasts. As we talked about just a few days ago on this show, we're still trying to perfect vehicles that can do that on the daily for people. So pretty cool. And you know, you mentioned along the way, Reggie, that first test flight of the, I guess you call it the toy version of the helicopter, lasted only 10 yeah. seconds. I can imagine though at the time that felt like a massive win, like a huge step forward, because you're not used to seeing things hovering in the air for even that length of time. 10 seconds probably felt like an eternity when Mr. Young there initially was able to make that happen.
Yeah. And, you know, think about where we are now. Drones use the same technology. Or in some way, you know, the propeller, at least. They don't really have the same stabilizer bar, I don't think. But the technology is essentially the same.
The concept builds off of the helicopter. I mean, let's be honest. Like, it's built off of that. If you didn't have one, you probably don't get to the other.
Yeah. And same thing with the car that you talked about the other day. It's built off of the idea of the helicopter. So we wouldn't be where we are with some of this technology without, you know, those first steps that come along. And to think that the first steps included rubber band and parts from toys is always interesting.
Always nice when your neighbor can mass produce parts for you, though. That's a huge leg up.
Thanks for joining us on another edition of Cool Stuff Ride Home. He's Marcus Paff. I'm Reggie Rizzou. You can email us at coolstuffcommute@gmail.com. Also, like us and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. We'll be back with more cool stuff next week.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a Swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.